I think over time I've not gotten blasé with saying it, but it's, I try and take the emotion out of it. Otherwise, I think it would just hit me every time.
Yeah.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Welcome along to the Still Parents podcast, brought to you in association with Global's Make Some Noise. I'm Dan, I'm here with Ryan and Matt, as always, from the Lily Mae Foundation. Our special guest joining us in the studio for this episode of the Still Parents podcast, and thank you for taking the time to come over and head over to see us. It's Chris Hay. How are you, Chris? Are you okay, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Any point, by the way, and you feel free to swear. So if at any point during this show, if you want to tell any of us to fuck off for asking a question that's too personal, just go ahead and do so. What do you do for a living?
So I'm a quality manager, work for a company who sells things into the defence industry.
Wow.
Like what?
Guns.
Submarines.
Oh, right.
Submarines.
I'm just thinking of that movie, War Dogs, now.
Great film.
That literally went straight through my mind as well.
That's a great film.
We're driving through Fallujah.
That's a great film, yeah.
Yeah, it's not quite as interesting, but a few little bits and pieces that go on there, so...
Is a lot of it embargoed and you can't tell normal people such as us what actually goes on?
Most of it, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
That, in other words, that was shut the fuck up, Dan, and move away from that line of question.
It makes it sound so much more interesting than it really is. But
also, what he means is we've got four members at MI5 waiting outside to take us down on the way out if we do anything.
Yeah. It's only three. Chris,
please get into your story in as much detail as you wish to do. Take your time if you need to stop at any point. Absolutely. We're here for you to do that and talk us through your loss with you and your fiance Olivia and what happened with your twins.
Thank you. Yeah, so we realised we were expecting around December 22. The previous year we'd actually had a miscarriage about 7 weeks.
Okay.
And we realised our 12-week scan was going to be just after Christmas Day. We didn't want to go through Christmas worrying with what happened to the last pregnancy. So we booked a private scan, went to it, and we've been joking around about it being twins and things like that because we're both pushing 40 and, it's more likely at that point. And we went in for this private scan and the nurse there, she's going, goes, right, and there's the first baby, at which point my brain just went, say what?
Say what?
Drop your guts.
Yeah. Olivia started giggling, and I just said, we're going to need a bigger house.
Yeah.
So we went through that, and then come Christmas, we didn't tell our families that it was twins. We told them we were pregnant.
Yeah.
Then Christmas Eve, we actually sat them all down. We'd taken a little video of it, and we got everyone around the TV, and we were flicking around. Hadn't said anything until somebody went, Why are they mirrored? Why is it flipping around? It was, well, that's the first baby. That's the second baby.
And they went, say what?
pretty much exactly that. So it was, so we were due July 10th, I think it was, based off that. But twins never go that far. So it was going to be more likely sometime in June.
Oh, is that a thing? No, it's the twins often come early.
Yeah, usually 36 weeks they tend to go for at that point, just for safety, and also they tend to just arrive a bit earlier.
So we
were going to have our scan just after Christmas. Unfortunately, Olivia had flu, so we delayed it, and then they transferred us over to Heartlands Hospital, which was the twin specialist hospital. So went over there, had the scans about 14 weeks, then got invited to a special scan where the consultant said they don't get many twins at this stage. Can they actually send her off? And Olivia got scanned by about 16 different doctors in training. Consultants. We got loads and loads of scans of the
twins. So they were thorough.
Very, very, very thorough. And then we kept going through. There was a brief fear around some preeclampsia at one point. Migraines and blurry vision and things. Went to the hospital. That was all cleared up, thankfully. Okay. And things seemed to be settling down a bit. And we got to around about 30 weeks. Olivia had a bit of a bad tummy and everything. And we went into the hospital. She spent a couple of nights. They did all the scans and everything was fine. It was deemed to be a virus or something she picked up.
Okay.
So they'd done the scans. Everything was fine at that point. Then come the 32-week scan where they do a lot of the birth options and things like that for twins. We went in. We were running a little bit late coming through Birmingham traffic and everything like that. turned up. For those of you who know Heartlands, they've got two, the maternity unit split in two at the moment. So we went to the wrong bit and then ran across to the...
Everyone goes to the wrong bit.
The right bit.
Yeah.
And when we got there, there was no time to do all the blood pressure measurements and all this because yeah. delivery just run across half the hospital. And we went to the scan, got on the bed, and the consultant said, "I'll see you in last week. Are there any issues?" No. Great. Started the scan and scanned the first baby, and you hear the heartbeat and everything. And then I thought he turned off the mic or something like that, and all of a sudden it was silent. And he started looking and looking, and then he turned to us and said, "Look, I'm really sorry. One of the baby's hearts stopped beating." So he had to call in somebody else to confirm it and make sure that what he was seeing was right. Obviously, our first thought at this point was utter shock, but also, yeah. what about the other twin? Is that twin okay? And he assured us that everything was normal with that twin. I should say they were what they call DCDA twins, which are the ones which is technically the least risky, because they've got separate placentas and separate sacs. Okay. So you get the ones that are identical, which will be in one sac, one placenta. That's the highest risk. Mm. So we were risky because it's twins, but theoretically the lowest risk on that. So the twin that was still breathing on there was doing fine, apparently. So they moved us around to a side room, and we had various consultants and nurses came through. They gave Olivia some steroids to help develop the lungs of the surviving twin. And we were sat there. It was just, obviously at this point we had no idea what to think, what to say to each other, how we were going to tell everybody.
Because it comes out of nowhere. You must have been in a state of shock, right?
It completely blindsided us. So much so, when we were driving in the car on the way in, we were talking about daft things. I was looking at, we drove past a garage. I was looking at, I'm going to have to get a 7-seater car now because we've got a 5-year-old and we're going to have the twins and trying to get car seats in and everything. And then in an instant, everything you've been thinking in that journey all the way in is gone.
That's the bit which hits every time you hear it. Just the fact, because of, the way, as you delivered, you're telling us the story, and it just sounds, it's so just like an everyday conversation. Oh, the heart stopped. I know that probably wasn't how it, delivered to that extreme, but it's just because it's blindsided. That's the word I'm looking for.
100% blindsided. I think over time I've not gotten blasé with saying it, but I try and take the emotion out of it. Otherwise, I think it would just hit me every time.
Yeah, of course.
So yeah, I mean, we were in this side room for a few hours while they were trying to find us a room up on the ward. We were in that awkward position where they couldn't send us up to the Eden suite because we had somebody who was pregnant there, and there were people up there who have lost babies. Mm. We couldn't go on the antenatal suite because of the fact that Olivia was carrying a twin that passed, and then so we ended up on one of the maternity suites. So luckily, we got a side room. But you could still hear babies that were being delivered and things like that, which was hard. So that was, I think, on the Thursday. The risk at that point was whether Olivia would go into labour because of the twin that passed. And at this point, we decided that we were going to name her Rose.
Yeah.
We still hadn't come up with a name for our surviving twin. We named Rose almost immediately at that point.
Was that a name that you'd had in mind before? Or is it?
It was one of the ones that was on our short list. So we named her Rose, and we moved on, and the risk seemed to be diminishing of Olivia going into labour. She was in there for about 6 days, and I remember on the Tuesday night, I think it was, there was a midwife that was on, and she came in and said to her, "I expect to see you. I'm back in on Sunday. I expect to see you here." The next morning, Olivia started feeling contractions and went into labour and was taken down for an emergency cesarean.
Okay.
So, we got wheeled down, and I remember sitting in this little theatre room while she's been taken into the main theatre, but I was sitting in the room beforehand, just listening to some music, just trying to, I guess, in a way, psych myself up, because I knew that what I was going to see was one daughter who passed away and another daughter who was hopefully going to come out well and so on. So,
well, there you say hopefully, because you still...
At this point, we didn't
know. The uncertainty,
we had no idea what had happened to Rose.
I've heard this after you, obviously, you know, we've spoken, as you know, and things, but I still can't get my head around how you even put it into your brain that you're going in and you're going to meet both your children, but one's going to have passed away and the other one's going to be there. We've done some things on this podcast, but like that's one that really does just like I don't know how you even get your emotions around it. To be honest, I don't know.
Well, yes, you're right, aren't you? I mean, cause it's, why would you even consider that before?
Well, that's what I mean. Like, it's like the most joyous time, but then the worst time, and they're right.
Yeah, I mean, we've said this a lot, Matt. It's when we were talking that we've never been able to be as happy as we should be with our daughter Willow, despite everything she's doing. She's going through leaps and bounds. She's been discharged from neonatal. She's absolutely fine, but there's always this tinge with Rose that says it should be two of them. The first time she went to nursery, they should have been two of them.
And that's going to be every time there's
every
a first
milestone,
time, isn't it?
Exactly that. So, when we were in the theatre, they delivered Rose first.
Okay.
And immediately she was into a Moses basket, and they take her off to the Eden suite. And then a couple of minutes later, they delivered Willow. I remember with our firstborn, she took a few seconds after she was delivered before she squealed. Willow, literally, as soon as she was out, you could hear it, which was such a relief. You still never know. She was still only 33 and a half weeks at this point, so she's 6 and a half
literally
weeks.
Literally the sooner. Because it's what you said is true, because it's not like films, isn't it, where you just, it always happens. Cause I remember it was a while before I heard
How much did she weigh?
Wow. She was 4 pounds 4.
Wowzers. That's a good weight for that gestation.
Yeah. So, I think Rose was slightly bigger through all the scans. So, she would have probably been, if they'd have gone to the 36 weeks, it would have been, there would have been beefy little twins at that point.
Beefy.
Did they deliver Rose first?
Mm.
Was that a plan that they were going to try and deliver Rose first? Or was that just how they were within, sort of,
luckily, both. Rose was the presenting twin, so she was lower down. And if Olivia was going to give birth naturally,
she would have been first. Right, okay.
But they also decided to take her out first because of everything that had gone on. But she was, I guess, in a way, slightly easier to get to from that point of view. So they got Willow out. And we got a brief time to hold her before they took her down to neonatal, because, as I say, she's 33 and a half weeks.
Yeah.
And Olivia then got wheeled into recovery. And I remember seeing her shaking from the anaesthetic, which was almost like watching a fit. At this point, my brain is scrambled completely for various reasons. A little while later, they wheeled us back up to the same room we spent the last week in. And I will say, the hospital were great. They got me a camp bed.
Yeah.
Basically said to the security guards I could come and go whenever I pleased, all the way through, which was absolutely amazing. It took away a lot of the stress there. Once we got back up to the unit, Olivia was recovering, so I went down and spent some time with Willow in neonatal. Got the delights of the first nappy, which was trying to do that in an incubator was
it's not easy, is it?
Well, no, but then they decided after I'd done it, then folded down the side. It's like, well, couldn't you have done that beforehand? it's one of these daft things. Even in those moments, you're still thinking,
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? It's like real life, the cube, isn't it?
Yeah, like the cube.
Can you win the cube?
It is. Yeah. It's like the krypton factor of trying to change a nappy through an incubator with your two arms in there.
It is. It's
oh, well, like the hands. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so hard. Yeah.
Well, in a way, it's like, okay, well, I've done it that way. Everything else is going to be a piece of piss.
In theory,
There must have been a lot of guilt. I know how I would feel, potentially, if I was in that situation whereby you've just witnessed your daughter who's passed away be born, and then you've got the joyous occasion of your other daughter that's been born. And you're obviously extremely happy to see that she's okay. There must be something there.
There is. I mean, you think about it, cutting the cord. So I've got photos of me doing that with Willow, and there's the biggest smile on my face.
Yeah.
The split second later, I know I was back to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I shouldn't be feeling happy even now because of what's happened to Rose.
And that's why I was so interested in getting Chris on, because I thought, like, you know, you are the first person we've had on who's had this experience, and yeah, I just it I don't know, it just the emotions around it.
So yeah, I mean, there were times, like I say, I was lucky enough to actually be able to stop over there, and yes, we got some sleep, but it was never,
it's not
it
proper
was sleeping
though,
but not resting.
Yeah.
I think is a good way to put it. So I was basically spending probably about I would leave the hospital about 4 PM, come home to see our other daughter, put her to bed, and then go back to the hospital about 8:30, 9 o'clock at night.
What was she at the time? Ella was about
She was just turned four. Yeah. So her birthday's May as well. So she just turned four.
So you still got me dad. Still got me daddy.
Exactly. And mummy and daddy had just vanished off the face of the earth. So to try and keep some form of normality, I was literally driving back and forth every night.
That's tough.
To put her to bed and just trying to give her that sort of stability.
Yeah.
And once Willow was born, we were lucky enough that there was a midwife who actually said, actually, we can bring her up to the ward. Mm. Olivia wasn't in any state to move at that point, so we were lucky that they brought her up and Olivia got to hold her and actually, they sort of lay on her and things like that, which was fantastic. So that was really good of the midwife who'd arranged that. And after she went back down to neonatal, I made the decision to go over to the Eden Suite to see Rose.
Mm.
I only actually discovered that today. I was going through all the notes and everything, and one of the things I felt guilty about was I didn't think I'd seen Rose until the next day on her own. And it was only when I was actually going back through all the notes and everything, just having a read through, I suddenly realised actually it was the same evening. I think it shows your brain just to...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Gone to pot at that point. So we stayed in the hospital for around about another week or so.
Yeah.
Olivia was recovering. Willow was doing really well down in neonatal, at which point we then said, could she be moved to the hospital closer to us at Good Hope? And they said yes. And I think it was the following Tuesday, they got an ambulance, St. John's ambulance, moved her across. Yeah. So I went with her and then a taxi back to Heartlands. At this point, we'd also agreed that Rose was going to have a post-mortem and she was going to be transferred to the women's hospital for that. So that day, Olivia got discharged. The same day, Willow was transferred. The next day, Rose was being transferred to the women's hospital. So we said our goodbyes at that point. And I remember walking out of the maternity unit at Heartlands just carrying a memory box. And that was it. So we'd gone in expecting twins and come out just with a memory box, which, yeah, I will never forget that walk across to the car with Olivia, just saying that this is not the way it should be.
Yeah.
And I think I've heard people say that seeing people there with car seats and things like going in there and so on. And
well, there's a reminder everywhere you look, isn't there?
Absolutely.
You can't avoid it.
I walked past the car seat when I took Callie, when we left hospital with Callie, take her over to the chapel of rest, walked past and I don't know why it does it. Just life just does these things, and I walked past and there was a bloke outside with a car seat with a pink balloon on it. It's just so cruel. Really is so cruel.
It is gonna be so hard to know that you are there with the twin that is alive. And then you've got Rose, who's in a completely different area of the hospital.
Yeah.
And I bet the thoughts about you don't want to leave her by herself. You want to make sure there's somebody there with her. And you're torn between where to go And there's no right or wrong answer at that time because of the situation that you're in. I'm interested in how do you process that and how do you make the decision to do what you do? Because like I say, there's no right or wrong answer. It's just merely how you...
I honestly don't know how we did it. Because at the start, Olivia was virtually almost bedridden, I guess, at the moment for the first 24, 36 hours. I had Willow down in neonatal and then Rose in the Eden suite. So there were three places I wanted to be at every time. And then going back home to be with Ella as well. So it was those...
And yeah, I forgot about
that. All those conflicting the bits. So I absolutely have no idea how...
It's the instinct, isn't it? I'm guessing you're just acting on instinct at the time.
So, autopilot.
I remember taking Olivia down at, I think it was midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, in a wheelchair down to the neonatal unit. Cause it's 24/7. We went down and spent about 3 hours down there in the middle of the night one night, just to spend time and actually just to try and process, I guess, something positive from everything that had happened, just see how Willow was. And she actually she went leaps and bounds. She got moved very quickly from, I think it's critical care down to severe care, which is it might be the other way around. I can never remember the exact titles. Yeah. But which was basically just lying in an incubator initially and then moving just into an open cot. And then we moved across to Good Hope and she was just in a cot. And they said it's the feeding and growing room. That's all she needed. So she's not had to have any medical intervention other than a feeding tube because she was so young. So after about a week, we were settling down, a bit of a routine. We'd usually go in the morning, drop Ella off at nursery or something like that. Come in for a bit, go home. Ella comes back from nursery, sorry, and everything. And then I'd go back there probably 10, half 10 at night or something like that, spend a couple more hours with her before coming home. And then basically rinse and repeat.
Can you, as best as you can, because it's not that long ago, what your state of mind? You're coming across as a very calm, like you said, objective, but how is that a coping strategy? Is that because, as we've mentioned many times, is you've got to develop your own ways. How were you doing that?
I don't know. I think it was all just instinct as we went on. I generally am more happy-go-lucky and things like that with things. So all the way through from the time we found out about Rose through to the baby being born, I still had this little inkling in the back of my head, maybe it was a mistake, maybe it was just a glitch on the machine and everything like this, knowing full well that it wasn't. But there was still that little bit, I don't know if that was my brain just trying to give myself something to cling on to. But yeah, it was one of those that I kept thinking, well, what if, but...
Is that your person? Would your friends, family members describe you as a, positive person by default? Because
I think generally I know it can change more on laid back.
You are very laid. You came in said I'm quite nervous. He's the most chill person we've had in that chair.
I did think that when he said to me he was going to be a bit nervous. So that's, I thought you'd be all right.
He's cool as a cucumber. Yeah.
I'll be honest, I've been shitting myself for the last week about this. But,
you're very good at managing your emotions. I get the impression.
I try.
Yeah, but that's the point I'm getting at. Yeah. Because at some point, maybe whether it's behind closed doors, and those moments when you just want to scream. How do you tackle that? What have you learned about yourself or still learning about yourself? What's been the distractions that you may have leaned on in order to not deal with that thing in your head that you're going to do later on?
I was talking to Olivia about this. There's not been anything in particular that I've done. There was no excessive drinking or anything like that, no drugs or anything. I'd go to the gym and things like that. And yeah, but even that, it was everything was... probably in moderation, the gym probably in too much moderation, to be perfectly honest, but
that's all of us, don't worry.
So through the whole time Willow was in neonatal, she was in there for about 4 weeks all told, a week in Heartland, 3 weeks in Good Hope. I didn't drink at all other than one night, which I'll mention in a moment, because it was a case of there may be a phone call at any moment and have to go in and things like that. And still having to be dad and still look after Olivia and things like that as well. So,
can I just jump in? The fact you even mentioned that, because that shows an incredible amount of self-discipline, and to have that amount of self-discipline in the moment where everything is still so raw, that's incredible. Girls, you know, just on a normal day, it's like, should I go to gym or just go pub?
No, it was, I don't know. I didn't feel that I could do that, knowing that Olivia was suffering the way she was.
Yeah.
And knowing that I'd have to look after Ella, and I wanted to be there for Willow whenever needed.
That's brilliant.
So after about a week at Good Hope, Olivia was getting a blood test because she'd lost a fair bit of blood during the operation, the cesarean. So they had to do a blood test, make sure her iron count and everything were up. And while she was waiting to the blood test, I got a phone call. My mum just ringing me. And I'll remember it to this day. She just went, "Look, there's no easy way to say this. Your dad's died." So this was 2 weeks after Rose and Will had been delivered. And
because that's what you know.
Yeah.
It always seems to happen, doesn't it? It always at once. We've had guests recently, more than one occasion, when everything...
It's like life knows. Yeah. It's like life knows. I'll do that. I'll do that to you as well.
Here's another curveball I'm going to throw in on top of
you. Let's see how strong you really are.
Yeah. I remember just sitting in the it's a huge waiting room at Good Hope where they do the take the bloods and everything, and I was just sat shaking, and Olivia came over, and I remember we're going over to see Willow at that point. I said, "We've got to go over, we've got to drop these bits off and things like that." And I was just in an absolute daze. Freezing cold, shaking. I know it was shock. It was just pure shock.
Yeah, yeah.
So went and spent a few minutes with Willow, and then Olivia drove me home and sat in the on the sofa just like, "What the hell's next?" And that was the one night throughout the whole time she was in hospital that I had I just had a shot of vodka at that night just as a sort of razor drink.
Were you and your old man close?
Yeah, I mean, he lived down in Redditch. He was about 45 minutes away, but especially during everything that had happened, him, my mum and my brother were literally taking shifts with Olivia's mum. So they were there day and night for the better part of 3 weeks at that point. And he'd been there a couple of days before, and he'd just gone home to get some clothes and everything, like change your clothes and everything, and I was expecting him to be over the couple of days later. It was, everything was going to be fine, and we'd gotten into a routine and everything, and then this comes completely out of left field. It turned out it was heart failure.
Right.
It was just...
And this, you say it was just a couple of weeks, was it?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. So.
You weren't working at this time, were you?
No, that's one thing I'll say. Mate, the guys I worked for were absolutely fantastic. So,
my boss, the guys at MI5?
Yeah.
the ones that are waiting outside.
Yeah. You see the little red light. My boss. I sent him a message when it first happened, just said, "Look, won't be back in today," and just got an okay, hope everything's okay. Then when I was driving home that evening, I rang him and said, "Look, this is what's happened." And his reaction was, "Shit, just do whatever you need to do." And the next morning, it was actually him that sent me the contact details for Lily May before even Eden Suite had come round to see us at that point, and he just said, "Look, I hope you don't mind," and he sent me this link, and I did some digging around at that point, but I was off for about 12 weeks in the end. Of which a couple of it was signed off sick, but basically said, "Look, just get a sick note, no problems, just do whatever you need to do." And he came around the house a little while later after Willow had been discharged, and so I've got a photo of him holding her in the front room, and brought balloons and things like that. So yeah,
well, that's really nice the way they
of how they reacted.
It makes such a difference. It really does,
because that hasn't always been the case with some of the guests that we've had on.
Yeah,
because you don't need that on the side, do you? Like, you know,
no, it's exactly what I've said to him repeatedly. It took away a massive amount of stress.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because, I mean, I had enough on there anyway, but it was just another thing I didn't need was that.
Because as horrible as it is, the world doesn't stop turning. Bills still have to be paid. For someone to obviously have that level of emotional intelligence and compassion, which is, should be really just universal amongst everyone, but it doesn't always be the case. How is Olivia?
So initially between us finding out and Willow and Rose being born, she was really, really struggling. So the idea of carrying a baby that's no longer living was just an absolute mindfuck. Mm. And yeah, she was really struggling. The consultant wanted to try and push to 36 weeks with Willow to give her the best chance possible.
So would that have meant two separate deliveries? Or
it's no,
just
no, it would have been...
Right, okay.
Rose would have been in there the whole way as well.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah.
What don't... Yeah. You don't want to think about that, do you?
Another doctor came round on rounds and so was saying that, yeah, okay, maybe let's get to 34 weeks and then we'll go from there. So they were like, okay, let's get to 34 weeks. Right. And I guess in some ways, luckily, body took over and actually she went into spontaneous labour and all of it had to happen at that point. But I don't think it would have been possible to get to the 36 weeks easily. I mean, after that, I mean, you say about guilt and things like that.
Yeah.
It is definitely something that it's never going to go away.
Do you struggle with it a lot? Is it permanently there? Is it something that comes and goes? The reason why I'm asking this, obviously, for people listening at whatever stage, but especially someone who maybe is in the same time scale as yourself, I think it's a really important comparison, just the nuances of however the loss occurred.
Yeah, from ours, it's been ebbs and flows. There's some times where it just suddenly hits you for no discernible reason as to why it's hit you at that point. I was holding Willow a couple of days ago and just said, look, I'm really, really sorry. And that's just, I don't know if there was anything I could do, but there's always that what if I had noticed, if I had a hand on Olivia's stomach and felt a kick or didn't feel a kick or something, what if I'd have done something?
Well, that's just looking for a reason to blame yourself, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly, and I think it's the same for Olivia as well. So, I mean, there's nothing that she could have done that would have changed everything, changed anything. We had the post-mortem, and this was the other thing that really got to us, because obviously we didn't know what had happened to Rose, and we've got Willow there, and she's been through, been in neonatal care. Just before being discharged, they'd found a little heart murmur, but they said that's not uncommon in preterm babies because the valves that need to close and things. But we didn't know what happened to Rose. Was it a heart issue or anything? Eventually, we only got the results of that in January. So we'd been...
Bloody hell, really? So that was a long wait.
Eight plus months, I think it was. Of it, the whole time, we were like, well, is there something that might be wrong with Willow as well?
So you're like living on edge, aren't you? Like at time, not all the time, but there's those moments where he's living on the edge.
Yeah. And I remember taking her into A&E one time about a month after she came home. And I think it's bronchiolitis or something like that, yeah. And RSV, everything like that. So they talk about, which is breathing and issues, breathing issues. And because she was so young, she couldn't feed properly at that time. So it was whether she'd have to go in on a drip and everything. So I remember taking her in at about 10 o'clock at night. Thankfully, it was nothing. They said, look, actually, she's okay. She is still getting enough. And she's just grown from strength to strength from there. And luckily, some of those concerns have dropped away as she's gotten older and older.
Right. Because you'll be more hypersensitive to any little thing. It's just,
100%. It's, so about, like I say, when we were in hospital, this was the other thing you said about COVID. I mentioned to you at the start, when we were talking beforehand, care network, so it was my mum, my dad, Olivia's mum, and that was the sort of rotation. Obviously, dad passing away, my brother thankfully was around to look after my mum because I was in no state to do it.
What's your brother called?
Alex.
All right, Alex, nice.
So he was absolutely fantastic. And then I was I just got into the hospital, rushed in, I was feeding Willow, so with these nose tubes and everything, so I measure it out properly and do these drip feeds and everything like that. And I remember doing there, and then Olivia's calling me, I had five or six calls, she knows where I am, so I can't answer because I'm like, got one arm in the air, on with this test tube. And then I said to the nurse, look, she wouldn't call me if it was wasn't important, and she went, so I answered the phone, she went, yeah, mum's just tested positive for COVID. So I was like, "Ah, shit." Said to the nurse, he said, "Just finish the feed. I'll go and get you a test. Go and lock yourself in the loo and just test yourself." So we're post COVID restrictions, everything like that. But as I found out, there was no actual rules around COVID and coming into the neonatal unit, which I thought was absolutely
insane. To be honest, there probably wasn't that many rules during it. Looking back at it.
Well, there was for some and there weren't for others, but yeah. We won't go into all of that.
Yeah.
Thankfully, tested negative, but obviously Olivia's mum was isolating away at that point. So at that point, we're then trying to juggle Ella having COVID, Jan having COVID, and then Olivia and I just trying to juggle between who's around to look after Ella because she can't go into nursery and so on. So it was all...
So wherever you turned in that space of time, there was something going on which was fucking horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and the last bit, really, before it all capped off and she got discharged, Olivia was expressing milk and everything like that. And she found a lump which wasn't going away. And for a few days we did that. And she went to the doctors. And so the day Willow's been discharged from neonatal, we were at the doctors who was referring her for a biopsy.
Oh, Christ.
Because they suspected... potentially, could it be cancerous? So luckily, they expedited that appointment. So I think it was 2 weeks. We had a visit over to Solihull and it was all benign and everything like that. So it turned out not to be serious, but it was, as I said earlier about the what's next, it was just, Jesus Christ.
Where are we at with everything?
So now, absolutely everything on that side, that's fine. Willow's doing great. It's,
can I ask a question?
Has settled a bit.
Please tell me you've had a holiday.
We had a week away earlier this year, so that was.
Can I'd want a fucking month after that?
it was just an absolutely insane period of time. And after, let's say, after a while, the 12 weeks or so off work, I went back in. So the first week I just sat at home on a computer clearing the thousands of emails that have come in over the the last 3 months. And then I went back in.
Yeah,
and,
of course,
you saying about the world keeps spinning earlier.
Yeah.
That was one thing I really struggled with when I went in, because I'd sent an email via my boss to people at work. Say, look, this is what's happening. This is what's going on. This is why I'm not there. I'll be back at some point. And my boss basically, so I said, look, this is what I'm saying, take some words from that and send it round. And he went, "Nah, it's perfect as is, send it round," forwarded it around to everyone so people were aware of what went on. And I went back in there, but even then I kind of went in as like, why is everything the same?
Yeah.
It's 3 months. Yeah, my world is completely different. I'm a different person now. How the hell is just...
why are you all just carrying on? It's not exactly. Fair, right? We hear this, they're not... Yeah.
And that's still...
Did you ever feel the whole why me thing?
Yeah. And even the when they came around the health visitors and things like that, they're saying, look, yeah, you get these people that are there taking drugs and smoking and drinking everything while they're pregnant and everything.
Yeah.
And they've got all these healthy babies. It isn't fair. The
reason why I asked that, because it's always stuck with me since Matt said it, and it's that whole, whether it's spirituality, religion, or just calm, or however, whatever you rationalize things in your head. But a phrase that Matt said, and it was, you know, that whole not fair thing, and you were blaming it on, and the quote was, every dickish thing you'd ever done in your life.
Yeah,
you're one of the most bloody lovely people I've ever met. So it's literally like just stepping on someone's toe at a bar.
You didn't meet me at 21 then.
Do you want to blow a bit more smoke up his arse?
Go on. Sorry, Ryan, I'll give you a compliment too.
You're
a bad boy at 21, mate.
Well, I enjoyed myself, shall we say.
Interpret that how you will.
But
on a serious note,
everyone does make mistakes, don't they? But like when you go through this period, it was literally that. It was like, is this because I've upset that person or done this or made that decision or made that selfish moment in my life about me rather than the people around me? And then, but it doesn't make sense, because I come back to like the whole karma thing is massive, and you can have a whole flipping conversation about that itself. But I look at it like this, that, you know, people may not agree with it, but it's up to them. But Callie didn't meet anyone. She didn't have enough time to make a selfish decision. She didn't have enough time to hurt anybody, and she still passed away.
Yeah.
So, like, karma, if she hadn't done anything. She didn't deserve it. None of our babies did.
Do you think it's like a subconscious way of just trying to justify and make the ends meet somehow?
You do. You go into your head and you think it's definitely because I did this and this and this and this is my punishment.
Do you still feel it?
No, not so much now. I think the big word that's come out a lot that's come out tonight is guilt. Yeah. Guilt will always be with me. I don't know whether it'll be how Ryan feels about it now, or I know Chris has spoke about that, but I'll always feel guilty despite not being able to do anything about it because I feel I didn't get a chance to protect Callie. But I was never going to be able to anyway. Sure. So you then have to work your way through it, and that's how you work your way through it. And then but it'll still be there. It'll always be there. You know, hopefully as time moves, you sit a little bit more comfortably with it. And that's how I look at it, you know? So. Yeah.
The Still Parents Podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Relationships, before we wrap things up for this evening, because we have to address it, and we've mentioned it many times. Relationships, I mean, obviously, what's the stats? Half of marriages end in divorce, but you're throwing in, you know, with what you need to mentally deal with. It can't always be a case of doing it together. It depends a lot on the dynamics and where you're at in a relationship at the time. If you're in a good moment, in a bad moment. I get the feeling that, well, you guys seem strong anyway, just without even getting into that story. But I'm assuming there's times when you both had to lean on each other, maybe times when you both couldn't be there for each other. How has that developed? And what would you say to people listening going, hang on, yeah, this is where we're at?
Yeah, I mean, that moment that I got that phone call in the hospital about my dad, it flipped on a head for a period of time, because I'd been looking after Olivia and I'd been trying to be that person to look after everything there, and all of a sudden I was just,
you need someone to look after you.
100%. I remember driving one morning, dropped Ella off at nursery, and driving back, and I came out of this junction and all of a sudden there's this car right on my back. I was like, I just hadn't seen them. My brain was just just completely out of it. Without Olivia being there, I think I would have gone to pieces at that point. I've kept her going as well at various points. I think one of the things we've had going for us is we have been very open with each other about how we're feeling, and just talking to her before coming on the podcast, I said, look, is there anything I should or shouldn't touch on from your side? And she said one of the things that really helped was us both coming in for counselling at the same time.
Brilliant.
So we used to come in, we'd each have a session, and we'd then go, there's a little garden centre up the road, and we would just drop in there and have something to eat afterwards and something, and it's a bit of a, almost like a debrief.
It's funny because you're not the first person to say that. We've had people who have come in for their sessions together, and on the way home they've stopped somewhere, and it was a ritual that they used to do every single time.
Debrief, that's the...
And they explained it exactly the same. It was like a debrief. And even if they didn't talk to each other about what they'd spoken about, it was their... that was their time then, where they were able to...
It was... If you said this is sort of thing we'd discuss, it was... Or there'd be something I'd been talking to Matt about, and it would make me ask a question. So we actually got a bit more... interaction that way and everything, so it really did help from that point of view. And the fact that we came in, I think it was around about the July time, so this all happened in the May, so it was very, very soon afterwards that we started coming in, and I think that helped as well, that it was still quite raw, but it meant I think we were very open. And we still are, we still try to be, and we try to be with Ella as well, which was tough. She understood there were going to be twins, and she asked questions about everything, literally everything, as you say, 5-year-olds do. And that was the only
time. No filter, is there?
Nah. And we said, look, unfortunately, the doctor said it was one, not two babies. Yeah, okay. And that was the first time that we told her. And then over time, she started asking questions about various things. And I've got a key ring, and on there, I've got Ella, Willow, Rose. Yeah. And this was before she could read properly. And she's like, well, why has Willow got two names on there? at which point that's when
right,
we told
her. Oh, right, yeah,
of course, yeah. And actually told her properly, because with everything that happened with my dad, who she was very, very close with, we didn't want to burden her twice at that age to have two losses so close together. So it was actually bonfire night. I remember that she'd asked about it a couple of times and said, look, next time you ask, we'll tell you why there's three things. And it happened to be bonfire night. And she asked, and there was a book that we got from Lily May, but we actually returned that one, got the twins version of it, and we actually read it to her. And she burst into tears. I never want to hear that again. And it's amazing how she seemed to understand. They say kids that age just don't process it, but she, for whatever reason,
maybe not the language, but I'm convinced you just feel the energy, or yeah, there's something untangible that just senses those things. Yeah. Like I say, it's the sponge, and we're past the age now, especially me, we learn fuck all, nothing goes in anymore. But that age, doesn't matter what it is, it just goes in, doesn't it? Yeah. I wanted to pick up on what you said about the going in together and having that therapy and speaking to, you know, Lily May Foundation, because that's highlights for me that there is, you need to do whatever works for you, because we've had guests on that have said we went in together and it didn't do anything for me, and I wasn't starting my journey until in-law, to be mentioning many times, that he went and did his own. Yeah. And that's when he found new best friends and he found a route to recovery. Not to say that it wasn't beneficial doing it together, because maybe being in that room was helping his other half, or subconsciously helping him in ways he couldn't, you know, put a finger on. Have you, long question, sorry, gets to the point, have you done anything individually as well?
Well, when I say together, we were here together at the same time.
Yeah, yes.
We were both having individual sessions at the same time. So
yeah.
We haven't done anything directly together.
Right.
But Olivia and I were both here having appointments at the same time.
And then you had the debrief on the way. Sorry, right.
Exactly, yeah. And I know she's been to a couple of the sessions, the Rainbow Group, I think it is. And that was a weird one, having a rainbow baby and an angel baby, I guess.
Yeah.
In the same delivery. But yeah, so I think that really does help us, just having those sessions. But yeah.
Future. Have you spoke about plans for more children? Is that a conversation? Is that something that
we've had the conversation a few times, and I think we're both, as I say, pushing 40, and we've decided, I think we've come to the conclusion, no, it would almost feel like we're trying to replace Rose. But if it happened, then we would be delighted, but it's not something we're planning on on going forward. Ella does still ask, she'd like another sister and things. So it's unfortunately, it's not on the cards, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Thank you. I think you've been absolutely amazing.
For someone who was nervous.
Yeah, I was full of shit, wasn't I?
I've been crapping myself for the last week or so.
Is there anything you want to ask Ryan or Matt, or anything you feel we haven't mentioned or brought up? Because obviously we're here for you. This is your podcast.
The only thing I haven't really said is, I've mentioned the guilt and things like that, but there's also that little bit of jealousy. So it appears now we see twins everywhere we go. And even daft things like we had two car seats, and we've got one for Olivia's car, one for my car, and we can't have them next to each other. You can't see the two of them together.
Oh yeah,
we'd got a second section for the pram, but that got put away fairly quickly. We had two cots, but we kept one of those downstairs, one upstairs in the end, and things like that. So that's, I guess, it's jealousy to a point. I'm never going to begrudge somebody for them being happy, but still, it's just like, why did this not work for us?
Your senses are always going to be heightened when you go through. So I was talking to somebody the other day who had experienced miscarriages, and they said that whenever they had a miscarriage and they went shopping, or they went, you know, food shopping or whatever it was, immediately all they're noticing are pregnant people.
It's weird, isn't it?
It's like a heightened sense of your mind.
It seeks it out.
Yeah, it does. You're in that situation. You're in that place where you just, yeah, you it's spot with everything, it all isn't the
it?
Time.
We yeah, mentioned it before, even like if you're late, every traffic light's on red. They're all going to be red in anyway if you were early, but now you just notice them. That's the most basic, simplified. But yeah, it's like you're seeking it out, isn't it? And it's there, and it's just there to torture you, I guess, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah.
And remind you of that. If you would ever like to join us again on the show, and we say this to every guest, whether it's for a whole show, if you, you know, whenever that is down the line, to continue our conversation, or if you'd just like to come on as a guest on someone else's episode, probably jump on for 5 minutes, whether it's in the studio or joining us remotely, we'll always would love to have you back.
Thank you.
And we think you're brilliant. Ryan, Matt, any final
I've just got to say, for somebody who was shitting himself as much as he said he was, he's so laid back,
composed.
I thought he was lying down at one point, you know,
composed.
And I don't say this lightly as well. I think you shared your story with a great calmness.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Rose will be extremely proud of you for the way that you've just obviously shared that.
Thank you. Yeah, echo that. It's the calmness. When I'm editing this, normally you have to take out a lot of squeaky chair movements, but you've just been still. You've been a pleasure to have you on. Which is a horrible thing to say, because ideally we wouldn't be doing this podcast and you wouldn't be coming on in the first place, but this is the reality. This is what has happened, and I think you are going to offer a tremendous amount of advice for other people in your other parents. It doesn't matter the gender, because as we say, we aim it at men, but it's not exclusive. But we wanted to get you on to do exactly what you have done tonight, and this is possibly the first one where they, like we said, not a lot of bollocks has been talked. You know, we've spoke about the things that needed to be talked about, and we really appreciate that. So Chris Hay, thank you for joining us. We will be back very soon with our next episode. If you would like to reach out, like I say, all the details are in the description. This is the Still Parents Podcast, brought to you with Globals Make Some Noise. Ryan, Matt and Chris, take care, and we will see you next time.